You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello and welcome to episode 59 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. We had two games today, the Pelicans versus the Warriors, as well as the Rockets versus the Jazz. I finally got it right on the first time. I've been, the last few times I've referenced this series, I've said the Rockets versus the Timberwolves, but no, I got it right the first time. So the Rockets versus the Jazz. Both games are blowouts. There was a bit to talk about, but not too much. So I'm going to be talking about these games and I'm going to address some questions. So let's get right into it. And we're going to begin with the Pelicans and Warriors. And New Orleans came out very aggressive defensively. It was obvious that they were communicating off the ball and they increased their pressure on the ball, so around the perimeter. The Pelicans held the Warriors to 15 points with 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. So you know that's a real impressive feat, especially with Steph Curry back. And with Holiday and Solomon Hill leading the way offensively, New Orleans established a double-digit lead. Now, if you're unfamiliar with this Pelicans team, you'll think, well, that's, who would have thought Solomon Hill would have been productive? He has been very good for them in short spurts. So I wasn't surprised to see him, I think he made, what, three threes in the first quarter, something like that. So I wasn't surprised at all to see that, but you could hear the commentators like, oh, where's this coming from? This is unbelievable. This is the performance of lifetime. No, it may be his best performance because of the pressure involved and the significance of the game. But he has been doing this pretty much his entire career. Now, the Warriors did claw their way back behind Klay Thompson. But in the second half, we saw the Pelicans finally get some spacing and run their offense through Davis. And this was significant. Not only because New Orleans blew the game wide open and got themselves back into the series, but Golden State finds themselves in a difficult position defensively. Do they collapse on Davis to prevent him from dominating? Because they really don't, even with Draymond Green, they really don't have anybody that can match up with him one-on-one. Or do they extend their defense to the perimeter to pressure the Pelicans' guards, which opens up the court for Davis? If New Orleans can consistently make their shots, Golden State's in real trouble because the Pelicans can slow down Golden State, but the Warriors don't have that kind of defensive depth. So they're kind of at the mercy of whether the New Orleans Pelicans can make their shots. If they can make their shots, then how do they guard this team? As I said, they don't have the depth to do both. They cannot, it's not like the Utah Jazz with Rudy Gobert where you can extend out to the perimeter, but yet you can still lock down the middle. They don't have anyone to lock down the middle. And they're going up against Anthony Davis, who whilst, yes, he's not, you know, Kevin McHale or Shaq or Charles Barkley who can just put people in the torture chamber down low on the block, he's still very effective, especially in those high screen situations, or you can still actually isolate him on the block as well, and he's still pretty good, that they have no one to guard him. The other major concern, if you're the Golden State Warriors, is the fashion that they lost today's game. And allow me to explain, because usually I'll say, sometimes it's better to lose by 20 than it is by 1 or 2 points. But this was the biggest loss that the Warriors have taken in the playoffs, single game of course, since the Thunder series when Kevin Durant was still playing for OKC. So they're not accustomed to getting absolutely destroyed like this. Now the point I wanted to make with this is game four is now absolutely critical. Even if New Orleans wins and technically the series will be tied and all they've done is defend their home court, but all the momentum will be with the Pelicans at that point. And another blowout will give New Orleans even more self-belief going forward. And if New Orleans has even more confidence in what they have now in their execution on offense, Golden State could be finding, they could be finding themselves walking a tightrope here in, because teams can get hot. Players, obviously individual players can get hot. I mean, you know, if you've ever played, you know when you get hot, you're feeling it, you feel like you can't miss it. It's like an extra gear, it's like a feeling that goes through your body, right? It's hard to describe if you've never played. But teams can go through this as well. And if all of a sudden teams walk in with confidence and they feel like, hey, these guys are beatable and we can beat them, we can guard them, plus we can score on them, they can't guard us. You do not want to give a team like this, like New Orleans, confidence. Because we saw what they did with confidence up against Portland. And we just saw what they did with confidence in game three and also game two. They played pretty well in game two. There could be some serious question marks over whether Golden State can recover if they get blown out again in game four. Now, if New Orleans wins game four, but it's not as emphatic as what we just saw, then this series is a flip of a coin. But if it's a blowout again, I would put money on New Orleans winning the series. Now, moving on to the other game, which is the Jazz and Rockets. And this was an absolute thrashing. And I say that with the most respect I possibly can for the Utah Jazz. And I predicted the Rockets to win the title before the playoffs started. So I'm fully aware of their capabilities, right? But I had no idea that they had this level in them. Now, they did drop 50 points on a quarter against the Timberwolves in Minnesota. But to play like this in Utah, in a pressure situation, after giving up the home court advantage, it's absolutely remarkable. And it wasn't just an offensive explosion. They bottled up Mitchell and the Jazz couldn't get anything going. We saw a 37-15 lead in the first quarter. We saw a 70-40 lead at halftime. Beyond that, they were just in cruise control. I mean, that was one of the biggest drubbings I have ever seen. And it's not like Utah didn't show up. Utah, you know, when I was watching it, I was waiting for a push by the Jazz because their energy levels were good. But Houston was a step ahead of everything and they were well prepared. The scary thing for the Jazz is the Rockets crushed Utah and they shot pretty bad from three, from Harden and Harden and Chris Paul were a combined 2 of 13. And that's considered their major strength, is their outside shooting. So if these guys get going, boy, watch out. Now if you're Utah, they're still in this series. They're down 2-1, but let's not think that this series is over. And the next game is in Salt Lake City, so it would be worse if... It would be a very scary situation for them if they had won Game 3 and they copped this loss in Game 4 and then they were going back to Houston for Game 5. They've got the home crowd. They'll be comfortable in their environment to bounce back. They won't have any distractions. And also, if Rubio returns, that should lighten some of the offensive load on Mitchell, at least on the offensive end. Because he played pretty bad. Not as bad as Ben Simmons last game, but he did play pretty bad. So the series isn't over, obviously. You would be nuts to think that because we saw Game 1, what happened after the Rockets killed them in Game 1. Game 2, they bounced back very well. So it's entirely possible that this series will still be tied heading into Houston. But man, if that's what happens, if this is the type of performance that Houston is capable when they have been woken up, I don't think there's any team that can compete with them when they are rolling. As I said, a 37-15 lead in Utah. A team that, to put that into perspective, Oklahoma's a pretty talented team, right? And they couldn't get anywhere near that kind of productivity in Utah. They looked lost in Utah, especially in games 3 and games 4. And that was a similar situation. Of course, the series was tied 1 there as well. But to establish a 37-15 lead with, as I said, the scary thing was Chris Paul and James Harden didn't play lights out, especially on the offensive end. It was just a really comprehensive victory. And it's the type of victory that shows that they are mentally capable. I mean, the talent was there, but the mental toughness to walk into Utah and just serve their heads on a platter. I mean, who would have thought? Who would have absolutely thought? I thought we were going to get an overtime or a game coming down to the wire kind of situation. I didn't think we'd see a 37-15 lead or 70-40 lead at halftime. That was just incredible. But as I was saying before, only two games and they're both blowouts. So I'm not going to ramble on too much about them. There's not a whole lot there to talk about. But we do have quite a lot of questions, so let's get right into them and let's aim for at least 5 questions answered because we got some time. And obviously, in the aftermath of Game 2 between the Cavs and Raptors, we've got a lot of LeBron and Cavs questions. So I'll try to mix it up a little bit, but just preparing you guys, there are a few of them. And we're going to start one we're going to start it off with a question asking me, why don't I take the LeBron and Jordan argument seriously? There's a couple of reasons for this. The first one is LeBron's career is still going. So his cement is still, it isn't dry. So if you would ask me this question in 2016, I'd say he was pretty close, right? Just after they bounced back from a 3-1 series, a 3-1 deficit in the finals against the Warriors. And he played amazing in those last three games. The second best finals performance I've ever seen in my life. Actually, the best one I've seen in my life. I didn't see the 93 one. But the best, the second best finals performance of all time. And that's including guys like Bill Russell and Magic and Larry Bird and Hakeem Olajuwon. So you had some great ones to choose from. Shaq, of course, as well. But I went with LeBron as number two. And that's ahead of five Jordan performances too, by the way. So I'm only saying the 93 performance was better than 2016 one for LeBron. The 2016 one for LeBron, in my estimation, is better than the 91, the 92, the 96, the 97, and the 98 performances from Jordan. So that's some high praise. But then in last year's finals, and yeah, I'm aware, he averaged a triple-double, like, whatever. You know, that meant absolutely nothing to me because his team was getting eviscerated, and he was getting... I was talking about the Jazz's heads getting served up on a platter. Think of Ned Stark's and his head getting being displayed. That's what was happening to LeBron in the finals last year, whether it was Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or whoever he was guarding. So he was the biggest reason, in my estimation, for them losing so emphatically to the Warriors last year, because the Warriors had no other defenders, right? They needed LeBron to do a defensive number on Kevin Durant, and he didn't. He got served up by him. So he wasn't smart enough, and I think he really cost his team any chance of really competing. Had he had locked in and coasted a little bit more on offense as opposed to coasting on defense, the Cavs could have very well knocked off the Warriors, especially the way that Kyrie Irving was playing. So that's one reason. We see these ups and downs with him. It's almost impossible to make a genuine conversation between Jordan and LeBron until LeBron's career's over. Then we'll let it all hang out. The other reason is once Kobe Bryant's won his fifth championship against the Boston Celtics, we were having the exact same discussion. And now Kobe's name is nowhere to be found. If LeBron retires in the next 3 years, and he doesn't live up to expectations, and we know, like, in terms of this conversation, right, that... When I say doesn't live up to expectations, I mean, right now he's plateau. He's ascending back into the conversation, right? But if he doesn't continue to ascend and he drops back down or he plateaus off, then he hasn't caught Jordan. Now, if he retires in 2 or 3 years, are we going to just forget LeBron's name like we've forgotten Kobe's? And is it going to be now a conversation for Steph Curry or Kevin Durant as the greatest of all time instead of Jordan? And is that just the flavor of the month? Whoever is playing well now and winning a title and dominating the league, are they now the greatest of all time? That's kind of silly. You need to match what Jordan's done in order to be, at least, by the way, in order to be in that conversation. So those are the two main reasons why I don't take the LeBron and Jordan argument seriously. And I know I'll get some backlash for that, but that's no, look, I don't take Magic seriously. I don't take, Larry Bird seriously. I don't take Shaq seriously. I don't take Kobe seriously when they are compared to Jordan. Actually, I take back Magic. I will take Magic seriously with that conversation. But there's not a whole lot of players in NBA history, and these are all great players. There's not a whole lot you can actually take seriously when you're comparing them to Jordan. So that's not really a slight on LeBron. That's just putting it in perspective. Now, if LeBron reaches that level where we are taking it seriously, then hats off to him. And we've been privileged then to see an all-time great. And we already have been privileged to see an all-time great. But just maybe they're not the greatest of all time. Not at this stage, anyway. Next question is asking me if Cleveland has re-emerged as the favorite to win the title. I didn't know they ever were the favorite to win the title. When was the last time Cleveland was a favorite to win the title? Anyway, maybe I should just answer a different question because they were never the favorite in the first place. I'll tell you what, I'll answer if Cleveland is the favorite right now to win the title. And no, they're not. They've got to be the favourites to come out of the East. There's no question about that, especially now Boston having a 2-0 lead. I still think Philly gets out of that series. But with the way that Cleveland is handling Toronto, and I understand the playoff demons and they didn't show up or anything like that. But still, Cleveland's rolling right now. And if they're playing Philly or if they play Boston, Boston will play them hard, but I just don't think they have the offensive talent. Boy, I sound like a broken record, don't I? Because that will be the third straight series I've said that. I said it against Milwaukee, I've said it against Philly, and then if they play against Cleveland, I'll just say the exact same thing. But yeah, Cleveland's got to be the favorite right now to emerge from the East. But we just saw what happened with Houston today. Do I really think they can compete with a Rockets team like that? Or the Warriors? Or the Pelicans? I don't. I absolutely don't. I think they've got to be probably... I'll give them third behind the Warriors and the Rockets. Maybe tied third with the Pelicans. But that's only because the Pelicans have to go through both of them. So if the Pelicans were in the East, hey, that'd be a good question. What would happen if New Orleans was still in the Eastern Conference? Because people don't remember that. When they're actually the New Orleans Hornets, right? And they were moved from Charlotte. And when they were initially moved from Charlotte to New Orleans, they still played in the Eastern Conference. So that would be an interesting question. I will add that to the vault of questions. How would Anthony Davis's career look? Had he played had the New Orleans Hornets or Pelicans, with we'll assume that name change still happened, had New Orleans stayed in the Eastern Conference? If you don't hear this question answered in the next month or so, remind me, because I think that'll be a good one to take on. Next question is, how are you so sure the process was just dumb luck? And, all right, the answer to that is, why would they trade, not just draft, but trade up to draft Markel Fultz? If they knew that Ben Simmons was going to be this possible transcendent point guard, why would they not only just draft a backup, but trade up to get a backup point guard? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It was pretty much just, playing the slots, just close your eyes and kiss the dice and let them roll, and whatever numbers come up, they roll with that. There was just no skill whatsoever with some of these draft picks, man. If they had traded the number 3 pick to get role players to complement Ben Simmons and Embiid, I'd say, well, yeah, maybe you're onto something. Maybe they knew what they had, but they didn't even know what they had with Simmons and Embiid. Speaking of Simmons and Embiid, could we see Embiid and Simmons clash like Shaq and Kobe? I mean, yes, we could. If you're asking me to predict it, I would say, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing, right? Shaq was difficult to play with. He's admitted that afterwards. And you look at his history of who he's played with, whether it was Penny Hardaway or Kobe Bryant or Dwayne Wade or Steve Nash, even LeBron James. They've never ended good. They've always ended in turmoil. So, could I see that with Embiid, possibly, or Simmons? I don't know. I mean, the different players, different personalities. It is possible, right? But it's not a guarantee either, because you've seen Stockton and Malone. You saw Jordan and Pippen. Players, Cousy and Bill Russell or Kareem and Magic. You've seen duos last a lot longer than Shaq and Kobe. Shaq and Kobe are not the only dominant duo in NBA history. So, I mean, that's an impossible question to really ask or to at least answer. Do I think that will happen? Might be better, because making a prediction and then saying I think something might happen are two totally different things. And I don't think they will happen, because I think Embiid and Simmons seem to have matching personalities. I know it's very early to say this, but it's just an opinion, right? Whereas Shaq and Kobe, for example, Kobe was ruthless. He was in the gym, he was working out all the time, and Shaq he didn't take the game seriously. He admitted that. Whereas Simmons and Embiid, they're just tough. They just want to play. Even though I guess maybe this is a result of having to sit so much because of injuries, that they're thirsty for the game. Now, will that thirst still be there in 5 years' time? And it may be suffering some difficult playoff losses or even winning a championship. Sometimes that thirst goes away after they win a title. So, Personally, I don't think it will happen. I hope it doesn't happen because they have the opportunity, along with the Celtics, to really rejuvenate the Eastern Conference with a fantastic rivalry. So I'd hate to see them get broken up. But it is possible. Moving on, and we're already at our fifth question. We're rolling right now. Okay. So was the 2001 Eastern Conference Finals fixed? That's probably a question in response to the book review for Ray Allen, and he claims that it was fixed. And Ray Allen does point to the discrepancy in foul shooting for Philadelphia. And yes, there was a huge margin of, there was a huge differential between the foul shooting for Philly as opposed to the Milwaukee Bucks. And some people say numbers don't lie, but that's not true. Numbers can be manipulated so badly. And if you just looked at the numbers, you would say, yeah, hold on a second, there's some inconsistencies here. But if you watch these teams play, the Milwaukee Bucks were a finesse jump shooting team. And Philadelphia was a tough drive to the basket, get offensive rebounds with Tyron Hill or Dikembe Mutombo. They were actually running isolation post-ups for Dikembe because he was going up against guys like Scott Williams and Irvin. Obviously not Magic Johnson, but there was a player in the 90s and the 2000s called Irvin Johnson that played center. He actually started in the 96 finals for the Sonics, but not the greatest one-on-one defender. Just a big body, the tough guy that could, you know, get rebounds for you, but not the greatest of defenders. Anyway, the point I was going to make is Philly got the majority of their baskets closer to the rim. And once again, if you've never played the game, and I'm not saying this in a condescending way, but if you've never played the game, you just look at the box scores, you would say, yeah, it was probably rigged. And I pointed out there's been series and games where I think the officiating has been lopsided, and the only explanation or possible justification is because the league wanted certain teams to advance or the series to go longer. But in this case, I'm going to say no, because Milwaukee was mainly getting all their points from the outside. Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, Tim Thomas, Sam Cassell, they were all jump shooters. So the defense from Philadelphia didn't have to be as physical. It's not like they were going up against the 2001 Lakers, where they had to foul the hell out of plays because you had Shaq driving, you had Shaq on the block, you had Kobe getting to the rim, you had guys like Rick Fox and Robert Horry who weren't afraid to take it inside either, or Horace Grant. So there was a lot more physical play on both ends, whereas there was really only physical play on one end, and that's why you saw Philadelphia get to the line a lot more. So no, I don't think that series was fixed. Next question is asking me if Prime DeRozan, sounds like a Transformer, doesn't it? Prime DeRozan, so I'm assuming from this year, by the way, because this was his best year. Would he have been the second best shooting guard in the 90s? What are you doing to me, guys? What a terrible question. But I've gotten similar questions to that. So this is about the third or fourth time I've got a similar question. So I'm going to answer this, and absolutely not. No chance. Okay, obviously Jordan is the greatest shooting guard of the 90s. I mean, he's the greatest player of all time, so that by that definition, he's the greatest player of that position, also the greatest player from that position during that era. I'm going to throw some names at you. Mitch Richmond. If you don't know who these players are, I am not going to waste my time talking about their careers. Look them up. And then if you want to make a counter and say, oh, well, hold on a second, Reggie Miller didn't have a great regular season averages, then we'll discuss the nuances. But I'm not going to go through the biographies of all these players. So Mitch Richmond, Reggie Miller, Ray Allen, Allen Iverson. Remember, he was playing shooting guard. Michael Finley. I know I'm missing players here. Clyde Drexler, Jesus, how did I nearly miss that one? Joe Dumars. All these players, far superior. Latrell Sprewell as well. Nearly forgot him. Joe Smith wouldn't have been happy about that one. All these players, far, far superior players to DeMar DeRozan. As I said, if you don't know who these players are, look them up. Then if you have questions, then let me know. Like, why was Mitch Richmond why was his playoff record virtually non-existent, for example? If that's a question you have for me, by all means, let me know. But I'm not going to go through the resumes of each of those players because that would take hours. We still have time for more questions. Let's keep it going. Baron Davis or Stephon Marbury, who was better? Now, that's a good question. individually, skill set wise, probably Stephon Marbury. But in just pure toughness, I would go with Baron Davis. He led his team, even though he never took them to the conference finals. They had some memorable playoff runs. When, I think it might have been the last year that they actually played in Charlotte, he actually completely outplayed Tracy McGrady when Tracy McGrady was at his prime in Orlando. And he hit one of the greatest shots of all time that didn't count. It should have counted. He got it off in time. The score was tied. The series was tied, actually, 1-1. The score was tied. There was 0.4, 0.45 on the clock. And Baron Davis catches the inbounds from his hip, flips up a jump hook from... it was where the half court and the sideline meets. Flips up a jump hook, banks in, and the referee said they didn't get off in time, but the replay clearly showed that he got it off in time. And that really was the tipping point. That was in the 2002 playoffs. That was really the tipping point in them bringing in instant replay. They did go on to win that game, thank goodness, as well as that series. Remember, this is, I think that was the last year that it was best out of five, but they won the series 3-1. And then they had a pretty good showing up against the New Jersey Nets with Jason Kidd, but they ended up winning that series. I think it was in 6 games. It might have been 5. And, of course, he was the leader of the 8-seeded Warriors that knocked off the Golden State Warriors. That knocked off the number 1-seeded Dallas Mavericks with Dirk Nowitzki. So his playoff success was pretty good. It was better than Stephon Marbury's. Stephon Marbury only made the second round once, and that's when he was a bench player for the Boston Celtics after the Knicks had cut him, and that was in 2009, I think it was. Yes, 2009. It was the year after the Celtics had won the title. So for that reason, I will go with Baron Davis over Stephon Marbury. But that's a good question. And that's all the time we have for today in terms of answering questions. Games tomorrow. Raptors versus Cavs. Got to go with Cavs here. They're sweeping, I think. It wouldn't surprise me if Toronto comes out swinging, but it'll probably be more like Portland in game 4, where they come out swinging, but then they just run out of gas. And the other game is Philly versus Boston. Philly has to win. They absolutely have to win. And this is the first time their backs are truly up against the wall. They are playing at home. But all that being said, Boston has not been consistent in terms of their play from home and playing on the road. So I think that Philly will get back into the series. And I think Philly still takes that series, but it's going to be a roller coaster of a ride. And yeah, let's just hope that both games are competitive. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the games tomorrow, and I'll see you in the next episode, which will be tomorrow as well. We don't stop during the playoffs. We do not stop. But thanks for listening, guys, and take care.